Today on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we have Google News, Apple News, Microsoft News, and an interview with Mike Katchen, co-founder and CEO of Wealthsimple. All this coming up next on the Canadian Tech Podcast. Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 75 for Sunday, June 19th, 2016, sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Well, Derek, hopefully our sound qualities have greatly improved, at least at this end for several reasons, because I'm now in my new permanent office/studio with a hardwired connection as well. Thanks to Kristen at techdose.ca, which I've been doing some work for, a full disclosure there. He's lent us a Snowball Blue mic. So this end, hopefully I even sound a bit better.
I think you do. Actually, I'm very confident you do. Actually, no, I know you do. And I'm pretty sure I do as well. A, I'm not in a boardroom that is very echoey. B, I restarted my computer a few days ago for the first time in probably a couple of months, which I think contributed to our recent audio issues. It's, every once in a while, even if you have a Mac, you need to restart.
Yeah. And it's like, like we say, we're not kidding when we say, have you turned it off and on? When your tech guy tells you that, that's because it does solve about 80% of the problem. Yeah. Anyway, because of that, we have a absolutely massive show this week because a lot happened in the tech world last week.
Yeah.
Not to mention another awesome, awesome interview we'll talk about in a little bit. Our pick of the weeks, and of course, our ever popular This Week in Olio. So let's get started. Well, the big story this week, and it started early in the week, our good friends at Microsoft, they decided to, they actually outbid Salesforce.com on this.
Yeah.
They bought everyone's favorite email spammer, I mean website, LinkedIn, for $26.2 billion. That's billion with a B, billion with a lot more than I have. Again, some interesting reaction to this. It's a little bit of mixed stuff too, but I can certainly see where some of the logic Microsoft's, saying they want with LinkedIn. LinkedIn after Facebook, they're considered the Facebook of the business world, and Microsoft really wants to get, more into that services area and stuff like that. This is like one of, if not the biggest tech deal ever, it's certainly up there. This sort of thing, definitely, it makes sense in some ways. You've definitely got a lot of data that LinkedIn owns about businesses, where people work, stuff like that. So there's a lot of speculation what they're going to do. One thing, for example, is for the CRM stuff. Let's say you're arranging a meeting with someone in Outlook. You can, from within Outlook, look up their LinkedIn bios, stuff of that. As long as they keep it up to date. I was actually reviewing the other day my LinkedIn profiles for something else. And there's a few people that definitely haven't kept it up to date. So, like anything else, you always shouldn't rely on it completely. But, Microsoft certainly, they have a big enough war chest to pay for this. So it's not like they're having to stretch it out there. But I think this is a good move for Microsoft. What do you think, Derek?
I do think it's a smart move. Being a sales professional myself, former and current, and having tried out and used a lot of services that would bring in data about prospects from LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and places like that through the Gmail interface or even through Outlook. This does make a lot of sense. Absolutely. Is it an expensive purchase? Yeah. Yeah, it really is. But when you consider that, I think this will be another quiver in Microsoft's arrow or bag of arrows, whatever that thing's called. Sorry. Another arrow in the quiver. There we go.
There you go.
To help sell their CRM systems and even premium Office 365 subscriptions. Because I could see, for example, where maybe there's a more sales-focused subscription that gives you Dynamics-type data on a prospect and shows it to you right in Outlook or in Outlook.com and gets you excited about the possibility of using Microsoft CRM products.
Right. And you know, it's very rare you hear the word exciting and CRM in the same sentence as well, though. So we should consider that. Yeah. Just a note here. Yeah. The only deal that was bigger than this, when Dell bought storage business, EMC, bought them for $67 billion. Which I always remember this one because, yeah. Is that a swallowing a cow.
Yeah, I guess that's a done deal because they just talked about some rebranding recently. So, but Dell Computer took out a lot of loans in order to make that happen.
Exactly.
I don't think
that's the difference.
I don't think Microsoft's taking out nearly as many loans, if any, to make this happen.
No, they're doing some sort of financing thing, which helps them on the tax side of things, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, they could have basically just bought this with cash, and there you go. The other thing to keep in mind is LinkedIn also owns some other business. For example, they own Lynda.com, which is a very excellent training site. And, you know, and both Microsoft and Lynda.com do have some very good sites dedicated to training.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens there as well. I'm a regular user of Lynda.com these days myself.
So, you tell me then, is there a lot of, Microsoft CERT related training on Lynda.com?
There is actually quite a bit. There's actually quite a bit, related to, like, maybe not this will help you write your exam, but there's certainly, you know, here's how Active Directory works. Here's the guy behind, you know, Exchange. So there is a lot. So there may be some consolidation hopefully they'll make the best of each.
Yeah. I wonder now if more will come to the service to help punch it up, make Lynda.com more of a competitor against other services, but especially new ones like IT Pro TV, which has a very twit like model.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot they can do here with the LinkedIn acquisition and the other properties that LinkedIn has already bought in the past. And certainly, you know, more and better data in Outlook about people I'm talking to, considering I have Office 365 at work and use it to talk to people at big retailers or people at other web development firms and stuff like that. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of these people on LinkedIn, or I'm paying you $10, $13 a month, something like that, for this information. If you're going to pay me a little bit, if you're going to give me a little bit more information and I don't have to connect with these people yet, you want to make me pay an extra $5 a month?
Exactly.
I'd do that.
Yep, and that falls right into what they're looking for. So, yeah, I think it'll be a good model. Now, one thing is, you know, you're saying about Outlook. You know, my big beef with Outlook still is the Mac client, at least the Mac client, no unified inbox. So, you know, hopefully as part of the deal, someone at LinkedIn says, you can't buy us unless we have a unified inbox. I doubt it, but, you know.
On a complete aside, I will say I'm finally giving up on Outlook on mobile. Outlook for mobile is... Not there yet. And I know they bought Acompli to get, you know, to where they are right now, but it's not good enough yet. And so I'm actually really frustrated with it right now.
Yeah, I've been using Gmail for quite a while. I never thought I'd switch to web-based, but I did a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like the idea of Outlook as a client, but I want that unified inbox.
Yeah.
Ever since I got my first iPhone, when they had that there, it just convinced me. And like even now, like with Gmail, I can kind of do some similar things with some rules and that. And that's I really miss it. Anyway, moving on. So the first half of the show is all Microsoft.
Yeah, sorry.
Like I said, that's okay.
But we'll get it all out of the way now, and then we'll move on to other stuff. It'll work out.
Apple and don't worry, Apple and Google fanboys. We haven't forgotten about you. Okay, moving on. Microsoft on the gaming side. We had the E3 show, of course, was on last week as well. So the first one I found here, they're going to use Steam to sell Windows games, not just off its own store.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I guess, again, I'm not a console player, as you all know. But I guess a lot of the, you know, there's a lot of titles that you could only get on the Microsoft store, but not on Steam. And I think Microsoft's finally realizing they don't have to strictly keep their products to their own store.
Right.
You know, they can sell on other ones. And I think part of the thing is, as well, is they're really trying to promote their universal Windows platform. You know, and these games are available or will be available on other companies' things. They've been criticized for, you know, some game developers have said that UWP is a closed platform within a platform, but it's not really true. So I think once they get some more titles, you know, especially on other things like Steam or some of the other ones, I think it's definitely going to help them. Because I have to admit, like when I look for games now, I go to Steam or I go to Good Old Games, or what's the other one? There's an EA has their thing. You know, I Origin. Buy all my Origin. Thank you. I buy all my games electronically. I don't go to the store, and you know, it may Microsoft may not like to hear that, but I don't think of the Windows Store when I'm looking for a new hot game title. So I think this will be a good idea.
Yeah, no, I agree. I even when I had Windows 8 on my desktop downstairs, I found the store obviously lacking in number of apps. I know it's getting better now since the move to Windows 10 and the Universal Windows platform and stuff like that. But I don't have a Windows. Well, no, that's not true. I have a Windows 10 laptop, but I mostly use it to watch Netflix in my bedroom. it's a fairly old device. I can't really do a ton with it. Right. So now on the other hand, everybody knows I have a MacBook Pro for work, and so I have a couple of games on here. I'm allowed to put some on, but obviously if I run out of storage, those are the first things to go.
That's right.
Regardless, and I've bought them through Steam, and they run really well. Now, my whole Steam library does not work on Mac OS, but it's very few and far between the games that don't. Yeah. So it would be nice to see games like Forza and Quantum Break and stuff like that make their way to Steam and also be compatible with Mac OS and Linux. That would be ideal.
Right, exactly.
Will it happen? I have no idea. But that would be really, really nice. So kudos to Satya Nadella and Microsoft for continuing to think about, hey, how do we make it really easy for people to just get our stuff? And, you know, no matter what operating system or device they're running, and certainly this will help. So kudos.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Also at E3, Microsoft has unveiled their new latest, Xbox console, the Xbox One S. It's due in August, starting at, and that's $399 Canadian, I believe you said, Derek, right?
Yes, it starts at $400 Canadian. They unveiled it, it leaked out last weekend, right before we recorded, actually. Right. But, you know, reporting on leaks is not really what the Canadian Tech Podcast is all about. We like confirmed stuff. So
that's right.
Now we can actually say for certain that the new Xbox One S, is 40% smaller than the current version. So, wow, talk about using a lot less space.
And there's no power brick.
And there is no power brick. I was going to say that. It's going to support 4K video output. That's cool. Once I have a 4K TV,
exactly,
including support for 4K Blu-ray discs, HDR imagery. So super surreal or super, you know, a lot more realistic type images, and a slightly updated controller. It's going to have a texture on the back now. The range is a little bit longer. It's also going to have Bluetooth inside, so you can easily use it with an iPad or your Windows laptop or just about anything that supports controllers through Bluetooth, and that's actually quite a few devices. There's going to be a range. The base price or the base model is going to have 500 gigabytes of storage. That's pretty good. It's going to come with the controller and a vertical. Oh no, sorry. The new controller and the vertical mount stand will ship separately.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Do we have pricing for that?
For the controller and the vertical mount stand, I have not seen pricing for that.
I think my only concern would be, and again, this is, you know, always seems to be some issues with the Xbox. They've packed a hell of a lot more in here. It'll be interesting to see if they've managed to solve, you know, some of the earlier Xbox models had the overheating issues. Hopefully this has been solved.
I haven't seen a lot of reports about that since the Xbox 360, since the Xbox One was unveiled. Like anything about the Ring of Death or anything like that, personally, I saw were all related to the Xbox 360. So I think that's pretty much all solved. Okay. And ultimately, these are Intel chips. Intel's, you know, latest generation is getting very, very good at packing a ton of power into a very small space that doesn't use a ton of, doesn't make a lot of heat. So I think they'll be okay. Similarly, that's coming out in August. You can actually pre-order the 2 terabyte storage model now, and I'm pretty sure that's $400.
I'm still, you know, just as a non-console guy, I would, you know, I like the idea of this, again, yes. But I'm terrible at console shooter games with a controller. You know, they get to a point where, and we, you know, they're talking about this, where I can use a mouse and a keyboard like on my PC, then I'm really going to be interested.
And if you're going to play a first-person shooter or something like that, certainly you can be far more accurate and far quicker with a mouse and a keyboard. Yeah. I don't play first-person shooters very often, usually when other people are around, and like that's basically right. That's all it's all on offer, or it's like a multiplayer game. Personally, I will choose racing games, sports games, stuff like that most of the time. my oldest son,
I don't suck on those.
Yeah, I don't suck at them either. My oldest son was visiting a cousin of his last weekend, and they were playing the Lego Marvel's Avengers game.
Oh,
and
yeah?
So, okay. Of course, he came home and he's like, can we get an Xbox? And I was like, well, yeah, we can. I would love to get one. I couldn't justify one because you were less than six or seven years old. Now you're seven. Now you're actually starting to understand this stuff. So, yeah, you know, maybe. But
that's where you say the three most important words. Ask your mother.
She's actually fine with it. She is. It's just a matter of cost and making sure we're buying the right games, and he's not playing it every day, all day, and that sort of thing. We're trying to make sure he has lots of outdoor time, and you know, he's playing soccer this year, and he'll do something else during the winter. So
let's move on from that to what they're talking about for holiday 2017.
Yeah,
it's all yours.
And that is Project Scorpio, a new Xbox. So obviously the Xbox One S is basically an Xbox with faster, better hardware, all backward compatible and all the rest. And so mm-hmm. Project Scorpio for holiday 2017, as you mentioned, it is going to be a beast. The GPU should be able to calculate at up to 6 teraflops.
Jesus, that's a lot of teraflops.
It's going to have an octo-core CPU, 320 gigabytes per second of RAM bandwidth. Obviously, will support 4K gaming, but at 60 frames per second guaranteed. Virtual reality as well. A lot of people are thinking that the Oculus Rift will be the VR headset of choice. There's some rumors. Don't know for sure yet.
Okay.
Regardless, it doesn't look like Microsoft is working on their own VR headset. We have the HoloLens, which is great mixed reality or augmented reality. Mm-hmm. No talk about a virtual reality headset. So it sounds like they're going to have to use somebody else's. Again, all games and peripherals that work on the Xbox One and the Xbox One S will be fully compatible with Project Scorpio. Looks like there's going to be a virtual reality-enabled version of Fallout 4. They were talking about Fallout 4 a lot in the Scorpio
unveiling. Now, with that announcement, I know a few people at Ellipsis Digital. They're absolutely mad about Fallout 4. Love it. So, I can see a couple of guaranteed purchases there.
So Bilson's going to get an Oculus Rift if Bilson, he doesn't already have one.
Yeah, he'll get an Oculus Rift. I can see one of the newer developers there, Lexi. She loves it that game as well.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I could see a few.
Yeah, I've met Lexi.
So this thing's a beast. This, like, you know, it's funny when you look at, you know, I've been in this game a long time. How much more? It just, they keep getting more powerful and powerful. You know. This thing's almost like, did you remember a couple of years ago, people were using these for Bitcoin libraries or cluster computing?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because of that. Yeah. Thing, holy cow.
Well, I mean, there's a game called Ark where if you, this is actually really stupid, but if you want to run your own Ark server and you have the Xbox version of the game, you need to use another Xbox as the server. And that Xbox can only act as a server.
I love it.
It is the most asinine developer decision I have ever heard. But
there's people doing it.
But there are I work with one of them. So, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen to the podcast, so that's good. It's not his fault, obviously. He really liked the game, and he had an Xbox at work and one at home. I think he won one of them. He didn't even pay for both. So it's not like he's just blowing $600 or $700 whenever he gets a chance. So he has one. He has both of them at home right now because one is acting as his Arc server, so him and his team can all play together on his server.
Is he married?
Yeah. No.
Need we say Ark?
He wouldn't have time to be married. Ark requires a lot of time, man.
So
so
this is how old school I am. What the heck's Ark?
Ark is a an MMORPG, massively multiplayer online role playing game where it's like prehistoric times, but in this game, actually, it's more like Jurassic Park, but you actually need to capture, and then train dinosaurs to be.
I'm just looking it up now. I remember some of these screenshots. Yeah, dinosaurs and machine guns.
Yeah, basically, it's like Turok. You remember Turok for N64? But you need to actually capture the dinosaurs and train them, and it literally takes in real time hours to train a raptor to be yours and to come when you call it like a dog. And I'm like, this sounds like
a game I would never want to play. Eve.
Yeah, yeah. Or remember EverQuest?
Oh, yes.
AKA EverCrack? Yeah. So, yeah.
But I never, you got to remember one of our co-hosts, Jameson, he likes Eve now again. There's people that are into it. And
that's fine.
You know, hey. I spend hours on a model kit, you know. I've been known to spend a few hours on Guild Wars, but yeah, requiring extra hardware.
Yeah, that's where I draw the line. I'm like, no. Like, why? No. Just no.
Oh, dear.
That's where I draw the line.
I love it.
Anyway, the last bit of Microsoft news, we promise. Microsoft is actually testing a new tool to remove OEM bloatware from your brand new computer that you just bought. So now Windows 10 already has a way to clear out applications and data to help repair systems that aren't behaving well or prepare them to be resold to somebody else, courtesy of the refresh and reset features that were added in Windows 8.
Yep.
Now Microsoft is adding a new third option, a new refresh tool. So right now it's only available for Windows insiders. So those are people who are on the, on the bleeding edge of Windows 10 betas.
Yeah.
But what this does is it fetches a copy of Windows Online and then performs a completely clean installation. The only option you have is whether or not you want to keep your personal data. Everything else that was already on the machine is completely blown away, including all the stuff that HP, Dell, Lenovo, Acer, Asus, etc. put on their machines, like the Wild Tangent games and stuff like that.
Well, you know what? And you know what's wonderful about this? Because obviously Microsoft had a program called, and again, it was called Signature, wasn't it?
Yes, that still exists. Yeah. You can go to the Microsoft Store online or in store and get a Signature Edition PC. I remember Vizio, who was well known for their TVs, they put out a bunch of laptops at that time, and I think some all-in-one desktops that were all Signature Edition. And all of the companies I just mentioned have Signature Edition PCs. The problem is that because they're not getting subsidized by Wild Tangent and all those other bloatware companies, they're more expensive. Exactly. But on the other hand, you didn't have to worry about it because it was clean.
Well, exactly.
No McAfee, you know,
and
no Norton.
Second thing is, I'm sure that this is the reaction it's going to be getting in the community.
Yeah, well, the reaction this is going to be, this should be getting is, it's about damn time.
Exactly.
And
so
now I don't have to buy a Signature Edition PC. I can just get the one, the cheap one at Best Buy or what have you, and run the refresh tool.
And we don't have to spend 2 hours getting the crap to start with. The trial versions of antivirus, the stuff like that. Yeah, it drives me nuts. Drives me absolutely nuts. Okay, so that was the Microsoft news. So now we're gonna take a break. We're going to hear a word from our sponsor, Olio Digital Labs. And Derek, of course, works at Olio Digital Labs, doing some amazing things. And looks like you guys have had a busy couple of weeks, because we haven't done this for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it has been really busy. Well, just right in the middle of trying to wrap up a bunch of projects. So one I don't have on here, but we build a really complex tool that collects a lot of data from a big retailer across Canada, slims it down, makes it usable, helps them manage their workforce, etc. Version 3 is finally wrapping up. We're just making some changes to the mobile version of the app, of the web app, so it runs on iOS and Android. Mobile is in beta. That's we got some fixes to do there, and that should be done. We'll wrap that up. And we've already been talking about version 4 on that. We are continuing work on that really big six-figure, six-month-long project. We put out beta versions of an SAP Hybris to Sage 300 e-commerce order gateway.
I got to tell you, that sounds painful. When you first hear
actually,
that, I know I've worked with both SAP and Sage. So getting the two of them to talk to each other must be interesting.
Well, so Hybris is actually an e-commerce platform that SAP bought from a company called Hybris.
Okay,
and Sage, so, of course, is Sage.
Theirs.
So yeah, it's not theirs. And it's actually, we've just made it work all with XML files.
Awesome.
Ultimately, that was the easiest thing to do. And our system in between takes the data from Hybris, parses it, shows it in a web-based ordering system so that our customer can actually see the orders coming in, mark them as shipped, put in the tracking number. And so we, the order gateway that we built, sends the customer a confirmation saying, hey, your order's been shipped. Here's your tracking number for, I think it's Purolator. Here's all the details. And then after the order comes in, we parse it, we show it on the web. And then we create a new copy of the order XML file and send that over to Sage so that there's no confusion between Hybris and Sage at all. And then when the thing is marked as shipped, we also produce an XML file for Hybris to read to confirm all the details. So yeah, it's actually gone really, really well.
Cool.
Our end of things has gone very well and very smoothly. And that time tracking software that I've mentioned before, that's in the very late stages of beta and user acceptance testing. So that should get wrapped up soon. We've delved into Shopify, actually. We're wrapping up
Excellent.
Some custom work. One of our bigger properties we've been running on some fairly old code has been moved over to Shopify. That's totally fine with us. So we've been learning all about Shopify and working very closely with their team actually there to make sure that all of the custom functionality that that the end client wants and needs is all in there. It's looking really, really good. You're going to be able to customize jerseys and stuff like that. That'll give you a little
Excellent.
Bit of hint about who it's for. So that should actually launch. Oh, I think it's this week, actually. So that'll be
cool.
Exciting. ITA Inc., we built a new website for them. We launched that recently. We also migrated 20-some thousand emails over to new servers. That got all taken care of. Westview Funeral Chapel, which is over on Wonderland Road, just north of Oxford, for anybody local to London,
yeah.
Adding a new back-end feature to their website, their CMS. This part's fun. Oh, wait, no, I'll say this first. I had a really, really good meeting with a prospective new client. This will actually be... So I'm not going to bring the history of Olio into this, but Olio started with a bunch of pre-existing customers.
Okay.
So we're actually looking at bringing in Olio's first brand spanking new customer. Should be this week. Get everything,
awesome.
Get all the paperwork signed off. And it's looking like the beginning of a very nice long-term relationship with them.
Yeah.
And the labs part of Olio Digital Labs is really coming forward here. We just ordered a bunch of Arduinos, Bluetooth modules, LEDs, and a bunch of other hardware to build a really, really cool prototype that will go for that, that will eventually be for that same, initially at least, that same client that of that version 3 and version 4 of software I was talking about earlier. They have a lot of stores. They have a lot of needs to service their shelves and stuff like that. And we're pretty sure we've got a way to do that really
Excellent.
Inexpensively using very modern technology. So that's
so. In other words,
really
if I'm
cool.
downtown and I hear the squeals, although the equipment's arrived.
If you're near Richmond and Fullerton in the next couple of weeks, and you hear it came from China or something like that, then yes,
we'll have to drop by.
Yeah,
we're here.
We had to order. Well, we didn't have to. We ordered most of this stuff from Alibaba for cost and stuff like that because. You know, big things like this need a certain cost level to make them make sense. And so we're trying to get as close to what our final bill of materials needs to be on this from the prototype stage. So yeah, we're actually really, really close on that too. So this is, it's been very, very exciting, frustrating at times, just trying to figure out like, well, like, could we do it this way? Could we do it that way? You know, would this Bluetooth module work better than this one? And that sort of thing. And so thankfully we're not the first to use any of these products, but we're pretty sure we're the first who are trying to put a bunch of these things together in the manner that we're trying to do so. So there's still a lot of R&D to do. Cool. And it's actually really, really exciting. So yeah, so that'll all be arriving in the office in the next couple weeks. And because it's coming from China, the shipping costs way more than the products themselves.
Of course.
Which was disappointing, but I mean, we have a timeline, so we needed to get it in the office. So we chose the fast shipping instead of the cheap shipping.
There you go. So good stuff. But yeah.
So I mean, that's what's going on at Olio. If you have any questions, if you want to talk to us about a project or some challenge you're working on at work, please call us or email us. Head over to oliodigitallabs.com. That's OLIO digitallabs.com. Email me, Derek, DEREK at oliodigitallabs.com, or call me 226-785-0420. We'd be happy to talk and help you move your project forward.
All right, great, Derek. Thank you. And we'd like to thank Olio for their support on the podcast. Okay, we had so much fun doing our first interview a couple of weeks ago. We actually did another one, and Derek took care of this because I was unfortunately called away for some tech support stuff for the place I'm working at now, Techdos. I've listened to it. Sounds like you had a lot of fun, Derek. I'm going to let you do all this because I know when you found out we were going to interview this gentleman, you were just geeking out.
And welcome. So we have on the line Mike Katchen, who is the co-founder and CEO of Wealthsimple. Wealthsimple is Canada's fastest growing online investment management company, and it is their mission to make smart investing easy, low cost, and transparent for everyone. Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
That's great. So I'm actually really excited to have the chance to speak to you and talk about Wealthsimple on the podcast. I used to be a financial advisor myself, and I still have a lot of friends that come to me for financial advice, and I'm really familiar with the various investment vehicles and the fees and that sort of thing. So thankfully I'm in a place where I can actually help explain those sorts of things to my friends, and I've actually been following Wealthsimple for a little while now. I'm on the newsletter because I like getting the information you guys send out, and I think it's a really great service and product you guys do. Can you explain a little bit about the inception of Wealthsimple and why you saw, or what gap you saw in the market here?
Sure. The easy answer is that we try to make investing really easy for people. And the reason we started the business is we wanted to make it really easy for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I was living in California at the time. I had recently sold our last business, a company called 1000 Memories. And, when we did that, the team that I was working with came into a little bit of money for the first time in their lives and needed to figure out what to do with it. And myself, I've always been a passionate investor. I've been doing it ever since I was 12 years old. I took it upon myself to help everybody figure out what to do with it, with their money, and built a simple spreadsheet to show you how to do it yourself. And the feedback I got from that very simple do-it-yourself spreadsheet was, Mike, we love it, but please just do it for us because we're lazy. I had 10 clients, and those were people that didn't want to work with a financial advisor or didn't have, the sort of assets that would attract a really high quality, high service financial advisor.
Right.
Because most of those, only work with you if you have $500,000 or $1 million or more. And they didn't really want to do it on their own. So we saw an opportunity to create this third option that made it simple for people, especially young professionals, to start investing where they don't have to worry about it. We kind of take care and automate the whole end-to-end experience. And that's really how we got our start.
That's really interesting. What were you investing in at 12 years old, though?
I hadn't learned my lessons yet. So it was a charity stock picking contest that my dad entered me into.
Oh.
And you got $100,000 of play money. I invested it all in a company called MGI Software, which I remember. And this was in 1999, and over the course of 8 weeks, the company went up 260%, and I won the contest, and I won a free trip for my dad and myself to Whistler, BC, which was fantastic.
Congratulations.
But I also learned a very important lesson about investing, because this was 1999, and the company was called MGI Software.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you can think about what might have happened next.
I'm going to imagine... I'm going to imagine .com bust, and then it looks like they eventually got bought for probably a lot less than they were really worth by Roxio in 2001.
Oh, there you go.
You're exactly right.
You know the whole story.
It's just a quick Google search.
A very important lesson about investing early that, picking stocks is a risky and very difficult thing to do. And so I've been a passive investor in just broad ETFs for a very long time.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a very specific thing, obviously, to get into ETFs. But we're going to stay away for legal reasons about any specific recommendations, of course. But that's actually really cool. That's interesting. And congratulations at the time for doing so well.
Thanks.
So you had 10 clients, and obviously saw a business opportunity here. You were living in California at the time. I know that there's another company that's similar to yours, but American. I'm not going to bring out their name, and I can't remember it anyway. Were they not around at the time, or maybe you just simply weren't aware of them, or did you feel like you could do it better or different with Wealthsimple?
Yeah, no. So, it's one of those funny things that at the time, there are several companies in the U.S. that do similar sorts of things today. None of which had had any serious traction, so was totally unaware.
Okay.
But as I saw them take off, and in parallel to me wanting to move back to Canada, I think it validated for me that there was an opportunity in the business, and decided to pursue it as well. So, kind of fortuitous timing and the opportunity to watch an idea you have get validated and still
right.
feel like there's an opportunity out there in the marketplace to bring it to fruition.
Yeah, and I think you just touched on a big theme we've seen in the past, but seems to be getting now, which is a lack of innovation in the tech, the financial sector in Canada. Was that part of what you saw at the time?
Oh my, yeah. I mean, that's for certain. The Canadian financial services market is very different than the U.S.
Yes.
People know the dynamics here, but dominated by five major institutions, the banks.
Mm-hmm.
And, as a result, we just don't have as many innovative new companies or innovative new services coming to market. I mean, I remember when I moved back from California that it was right at the time that all the banks were finally introducing, deposit check with your phone.
Right.
And they were calling it this massive new innovative feature, and they were spending millions of dollars advertising it to Canadians how they were so innovative. And I was like, are you kidding me? I've been living in California for the last, 4 years. And like when I moved to California, they existed, it had been old news technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Canadians are used to that. And when we came to Canada, most Canadians still open investment accounts with pen and paper.
Right.
You want to open an account, you got to fill out 30 pages of paperwork, you got to fax it in, mail it in, or walk it into a bank branch just to get started.
Yeah.
And we decided, that's just the signal of the opportunity for us. So created a digital onboarding experience. I think we still have the only mobile onboarding experience where you can open up and fund an investment account on your phone in 10 minutes.
Oh, nice.
So we just see a massive opportunity and just scratching the surface on using technology and modern design to simplify financial services for consumers.
Yeah, I use, in parallel to what you're saying, I use a few different banks for various reasons. And Tangerine unveiled mobile check deposit, by taking a picture of it through the app, I think maybe 2 years ago at the very, very most. RBC, I think, finally brought it out, sometime late last year. And then I'm not certain Scotiabank even has it yet. So I'm not sure about the other banks. But, yeah, certainly that's something I recall when I still had cable.
I recall being advertised by Chase, for instance, Chase Bank down in the States, gosh, at least 7 or 8 years ago. And I remember thinking, wow, that is really, really cool. And I will not see it here for probably at least a decade, knowing full well just how slow things have tended to move here in the Canadian market. But I think it's great that companies like yours have come along and are actually really pushing the banks to think outside the box a little bit more. And I guess maybe the best analogy is your Wealthsimple and companies like it are the tide that are raising all boats. Would you tend to agree?
I mean, I think that's super flattering. I'm not sure that we think of it that way, but appreciate it if that's the sentiment. I think one thing is definitely rewarding, which is we have a mission, which is to bring smart, simple financial services to everybody, mm-hmm. to make them accessible and transparent. And since we've launched the business, two banks have launched directly competitive products to ours. I think that's like the fastest any of the banks have ever launched new products to market.
Probably.
All of the other banks are looking to launch similar products and services. And so, to see the industry react in that sort of a way in such a short amount of time is certainly exciting and rewarding. But, we feel like we're just getting started and barely, a foot into the journey that of where we want to take the business and what we want to do for Canadian consumers and consumers around the world, for that matter.
Cool. So one of your team members let me know that you actually had the chance to speak alongside Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on disruption in fintech in Canada. I haven't had a chance to see any information about that event or to see see any notes about that. What was that event all about, and how did you actually get a chance to meet the Prime Minister?
So I hate to disappoint, but I actually had to be out of town on that day. So
oh, no.
took the speaking spot instead.
Oh.
So it wasn't me up there, but he did have the chance to meet the Prime Minister, and from what I understand, he did a wonderful job speaking about disruption and financial services. I heard it was fantastic, but I unfortunately can't comment.
Oh, okay, never mind. I was misinformed. All right. That's okay. It happens. Okay, so that's really great. So, how do you feel about how Wealthsimple is doing in its short lifetime? I think the company's only been around for maybe 2 or 3 years. Like, how do you feel about your growth so far, your prospects moving forward, that sort of thing?
Honestly, it's surreal. I don't think anybody believed that we'd be as far as we are in such a short amount of time. So the business is about 21 months old. So we're still very new, not even 2 years.
Right.
We're managing about $500 million for almost 20,000 clients in Canada today.
Okay, great. I didn't know if you would be able or willing to share some numbers here. So that's great to know. Good.
Yeah. So, we're really excited about that. I think it's further than we thought we would be in such a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. But the flip side to that is it's still peanuts in this industry. We're talking about an industry in Canada alone of $3.1 trillion roughly,
right.
In terms of assets. So, we feel like we've got a lot of work cut out for us to make a difference and to really push this industry forward. So we're just getting started.
Well, you're averaging almost 1,000 new customers a month. I'd say that's pretty good for just about any size business, especially one in an industry that is known to be stale, let's say.
Yeah. No, we're certainly excited about how we're growing. We're certainly excited about how we're growing, and we've been lucky that we've aligned ourselves with a great partner. We raised $30 million from Power Financial last year, and that's enabled us to move really quickly and to do things that I think, most two-year-old companies wouldn't dream of doing. So, we've already acquired another business, which was cool. We bought a 30-year-old brokerage business, which added just a tremendous amount of capability to the suite of services we offer. We've run a huge ad campaign, in financial services. You have a really tough challenge in the consumer business because of the trust bar. Mm-hmm. Why should I ever trust you with my life savings? And so we've made the decision to bet on investing in building a brand that is human and authentic and something that consumers can relate to. rather than, you know, I think what most people perceive as financial services brands are old, stale, tired, mm-hmm. not authentic. That sort of thing.
Yeah, one would probably usually think greedy, right? The banks just want your money and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, just a couple of questions I wanted to make sure I ask. What do you, so you have a $30 million investment, that's great. Growth has you know, it sounds like it's at least matched your ambitions, if not surpassed it. What's the biggest pain point you've been dealing with for Wealthsimple these days?
Personal pain point or as a company?
Whichever you'd prefer to share. How about that?
Yeah. There's lots. Listen, you know, I think one of the personal and company pain points is it's super exciting and fun to grow a business so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's super challenging too. You know, we've gone from a team of 3 to almost 50 people today between the two companies, the one we acquired and the kind of traditional Wealthsimple core business.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing that while building the company and building a culture and a team and making sure people are excited and productive is challenging, but super exciting at the same time. So that's one of the big challenges is how do you do that and scale the business? The other is, you know, how do we continue to sustain growth? So we're growing super fast. The banks are trying to get into our business. You know, how do we make sure that we continue to push the envelope? You know, don't just rest on what the product looks like today, what our marketing looks like today, but, you know, push forward and continue to drive this big change in the industry and grow with our clients. So, you know, what's next is the big challenge for us constantly.
Right, right. Okay. Last question. What book are you reading right now, whether it's fiction or nonfiction? If you're not reading one right now, what was the last book you read?
So I usually read a couple books at a time.
Okay.
I'm reading two right now. One is the biography on Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, okay.
By Walter Isaacson, which I'm finding pretty fascinating. You know, the kind of classic entrepreneurial story from a long time ago, but still such an interesting and telling life story. I find it super fascinating, even though I find biographies sometimes very difficult to read.
They can be, yeah.
The second book I'm reading is one that was recommended to me by a friend called Conscious Capitalism. And so this one is, yeah, it's about, you know, new sorts of organizations that are being built today that have a broader purpose than profits. You know, purpose around community, a purpose around team, a purpose around mission that they're trying to, you know, add value to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you create that sort of organization? And, you know, what are the things you have to believe? What are the ways you have to act to actually, you know, be authentic and credible in pursuing that? Because it's easy to pay that sort of thing lip service, but how do you truly live that? Mm-hmm. And so that's been an interesting book that I've just started as well.
Okay. Well, that's terrific. I know you're a busy guy, and it's getting late on a Friday afternoon, so I'm going to let you go. But thank you so much for joining us on the Canadian Tech Podcast. And if there's anything you guys need to let Canadians know about Wealthsimple, new products and services, etc., feel free to send it along, and we'll make sure to mention it on the show.
We so appreciate that. Thanks for having me today.
All right. Thanks, and have a great day.
Okay, that was a great interview, Derek. Sounds like you guys had a lot of fun and you had a good geek out session in terms of finance.
Yeah, I did, which I know sounds incredibly nerdy, and I'm sorry, but it's cool. Like I enjoy talking about stocks and bonds. Well, not so much bonds, but stocks and mutual funds and segregated funds and ETFs and all the rest. So I'm not currently, well, that's not true. I am a licensed mutual fund representative and a licensed life insurance sales representative. I don't have anybody sponsoring my licenses right now, so I can't give you any advice or sell you life insurance. But certainly, I'm happy to answer questions. So if you find my website and send me a question, I'll answer it for you. It's no big deal.
There we go. The excitement of financial planning.
Hey. somebody's got to pay for your retirement, and it's not going to be the government. That 12 grand a year is not going to be enough. So yeah, exactly. You're going to have to sock away a little bit more for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause I really don't think I'll be a kept man anytime soon. So. All right. Let's move on. Google, they launched a new iPhone keyboard. They've been promising this. They had it in the States a few months ago.
Yeah.
It's a Gboard iPhone keyboard. And I'm not normally one that, you know, downloads the latest and greatest in keyboards, but this one kind of fascinated me because it has built in search. But also it has, basically the ability to do, you know, to not take your finger off the keyboard.
Yes, welcome to typing. 2016. Like
I know, just like the Android people have had for how long?
Years.
I know.
Years.
You know, my wife and I had Palm Pilots before, and that's the one thing she still complains about, because the Palm Pilot had something similar.
It did.
And I have to admit, after using it, I've had it now for a couple of days, I can see why people would laugh at iPhone people before. Well, I'm very impressed with it.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a soccer game in Toronto last summer, and my dad and my oldest son and I ran into a couple of other Portuguese guys who were from Montreal, and we had lunch.
A soccer game in Toronto, imagine.
Yeah, imagine that.
What a surprise.
Yeah, and they were going to the game too, of course. So, so we actually had... we had dinner with them, and then we parted ways at the game because we had seats in very different parts of the stadium, BMO Field. But when I was taking down one of their information, because they had a buddy who like ran a Roku service and we could get all the soccer games we wanted to watch through it, I was like, oh, that's cool. So, you know, let me get your name and your number. And so he was like, oh yeah, I don't remember his name right now, but you know, here's my first name. And so I swiped on the keyboard to put it in. And his last name, he's like, whoa, you can swipe across the letters? And I said, yeah, let me guess, you have an iPhone? He goes, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I've got an Android. Let me wow you with my ability to swipe my finger across my keyboard. And my keyboard's 99% of the time guesses the right word that I'm looking for.
And you
for.
Know what? That's what also I'm impressed with. It's picked up my, you know, I've managed to learn it very quickly, whether it's helping me along or whatever. But yeah, I'm very impressed because, yeah, right now, you know, even I have an iPhone 6 and even my fat fingers, I mistype a lot. But this, yeah, is certainly a heck of a lot better. So I'm very impressed, even just for that feature. Never mind the fact that you can search right from the keyboard and some of the other things. So
you can search for emoji and for GIFs. Your life is complete now, man. You can die a happy man.
I can die a happy man. I can send my wife 10,000 more different emojis or GIFs or whatever.
You know? Oh, don't even. You just wait till we talk about iOS 10.
Oh,
you
I
just
know.
Wait.
I know. I know exactly. So, yep, this was actually very, very cool, and I was very impressed. Like I say, I'm not normally one that downloads the latest and greatest virtual keyboard, even though it's been a feature for a year or two. But this one, definitely, if you're an iOS user, I would definitely recommend. So
for sure,
there we go. Okay, so how about that for a nice segue? iOS, Apple, you know. Now we're moving into an Apple section. Do you like that?
Yes, we are.
You see what I did there?
I'm learning from the pro. Absolutely,
you know. Well, I'm
okay,
trying different
so,
sound effects. I hope you heard some.
Oh no, there. I didn't, sorry.
You didn't, sadly. No, okay, I'll have to work on that later,
but that's okay. So right. As you just alluded to, not only did we have E3 this week, but on Monday, Apple does what they do best, and they dominated the news cycle with their WWDC, aka the Worldwide Developers Conference 2016 keynote, which was way too long. I'm sorry, but man, for what we got,
it was amazing. Yeah. Now, let me start with the negative, just so I can get it out of the way.
Sure.
You know, and everyone predicted this anyway. They didn't announce any hardware upgrades for their laptops. I was really hoping we would see a new model of.
I think
Air.
September is now hardware time.
That's exactly. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
June is software time. Fine. September is hardware time when we get the actual releases of said software.
Yeah. But in the meantime, as you said, they had a ton of stuff.
Oh, yeah. There was a ton of stuff, but none of it, I didn't care. None of it made me think like, whoa, look what Apple's doing now. We'll get into it, but like a little bit on iOS 10, but
yeah, there's certain things, yeah. But you know, it's funny because, you know, and I've said this before too, like, you know, they talk about, oh, we've got our new map app, our new phone, our new calendar. I use Gmail. I use Google Calendar. Like, I don't use the built-in Apple one. So,
yeah.
You know, I can see with people, you know, talking about this and that's fine. But, you know, but yeah, there's definitely a couple of new things.
Well, let's start right there because you just said, well, I use all these other services. Point number one that was not covered in the keynote but was made very clear afterwards, you will finally be able to delete a bunch of the built-in apps from iOS 10. Now, actually, you don't delete them. All it does is hide it from your home screen. But you know what? That's fine. That's all you really need so that you can no longer have this I don't use this stuff folder on your home screen anymore.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So that's great. That's actually a big improvement. With Google, it's not Android. You can't actually do that much. You can disable a bunch of apps, but just like with iOS 10, they don't actually get deleted from your phone. But that makes the next part all the weirder, where you can go to the App Store and quote unquote re-download that app, but it never actually leaves your phone or your tablet.
So you're not really saving anything.
All you're really doing is re-enabling it. It doesn't actually save you any storage space. So that's annoying in an era where they're still doing 16 gigabyte storage phones.
Yeah, exactly. Because what I do right now, the first thing I do is I make a separate little folder that goes to my very last screen. And that's where the stock app goes and all the stuff I don't use. Yeah, it just all goes in there. So, you know, that's one of the most important things. What else? We're going to have a new version of OS X. Oh, sorry. It's now called Mac OS.
And we kind of knew this was going to happen. This was leaked a few months ago. So it's not surprising, but it is confirmed. Yeah, so it'll be Mac OS. The next version is going to be called Sierra. I'll probably finally install it next April. I do work. I do real work on this device, so I cannot deal with undiscovered beta bugs.
Well, it's the same thing I tell people every single time a new thing comes out. And I know many of our listeners, you know, as soon as if it's released at 9, they're downloading it at 9:05.
No.
I tell people, wait a week at least. Yes. If it's something you need, wait a week. And if, unless you really, really need it, like, wait.
Well,
there's
absolutely
no point.
And then even what, iOS 9.2 or 9.3 bricked a bunch of iPad Pros?
Exactly. Like, exactly. Wait a while.
This can happen. It's not going to hurt you to wait even 3 or 4 days, let alone a month. Just wait. I literally only put El Capitan on this MacBook Pro maybe 2 months ago.
Well, I still don't have that on my old MacBook because it'll run it, but I just know it'll be really old.
Yeah, sure. Well, and then Mac OS Sierra is actually knocking off a bunch of old hardware from being able to run it. Any MacBooks,
which is expected.
Any MacBooks 2009 and older will not get Sierra, which, you know, that's pretty good. And, like, you're still going to get security updates and patches and stuff like that for El Capitan or Mavericks or whatever else came.
Yosemite,
you know,
came or whatever. I'm still running Yosemite on my MacBook. It's a 2011. It runs just nicely at a sweet spot. And
honestly,
nothing I need.
You're not missing much.
No, exactly. No, well, my Mac Air had it at later versions when I had my Mac Air when I was at Ellipsis Digital. But there's nothing really. So, you know, a couple other things. As soon as I heard they announced it, Sierra, being an old school gamer, I immediately thought of the old Sierra Online games.
Yeah.
You know, but there we go. But they're going to have Siri to the desktop.
Limited, but yes.
Limited, copying what Microsoft's doing with Cortana. But again, that kind of makes sense. You know, we're slowly seeing this, you know, slow, you know, eventually there'll be a merging of you know, much like what Microsoft's been trying to do with Windows 10. I think, you know, a few versions along, you're going to have, you know, iOS and Mac OS are essentially going to be the same thing. I think that's what Apple wants to do at some point. So,
No.
I don't know if they'll get away with it.
I would disagree vehemently that's going to happen anytime soon, at least. With the way they've been branding watchOS and tvOS and macOS and iOS, I think they're going the complete opposite direction of Microsoft right now. Microsoft is Windows everywhere. Like Xbox is actually the next big update, software update for Xbox One is actually bringing Windows 10 to Xbox One.
Yeah.
So whereas they've got all these different platforms now, and you can't build for just one. Whereas that's exactly what Windows is doing. So I think Apple's losing its mojo, man. But anyway,
yeah. It'll be interesting to see. Okay, yeah. So what else is
Apple Pay is coming to the web and to Canada, and it will be supported in Canada at launch. So you will actually be able to buy things online through Safari on the web. It will work through Touch ID, so either through your phone or your Apple Watch. I don't know whether this will work. Like, I'm buying something on the web on my laptop, and I also happen to have an iPhone with Touch ID.
Yeah. How will that work?
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, it looks like this will only work with the device that actually has Touch ID on it. So your watch, your phone, or a newer iPad that has Apple Pay built in. Well, you know what? Like, that's okay.
I'm still waiting for my bank, President's Choice, which is CIBC, to finally come along on the Apple side.
Yeah, give them a few more months. They'll get there.
Give it
you
time.
Don't pay anything for your account, okay?
No, exactly. But I know there's a lot of CIBC customers that are annoyed too. So
yes. Well, yeah, and they pay dearly for their accounts. So, but exactly. As soon as CIBC is ready, I imagine PC Financial will be right behind within weeks, a few weeks. The watchOS 3 is supposed to make Apple Watch much faster. Apps are supposed to load up to 7 times faster than on watchOS 2. They're going to do some background refreshing and keeping apps stored in memory. I fear what that will do to the battery, to the already poor battery life. But, hey, not my problem because I don't own one.
I only know of one or two people that do. I'll have to ask them if they notice a difference.
I know two people who do. Actually, no. I know like 5 or 6 people who do. I only know one of them who actually wears it every day.
Interesting.
And that's I think that's one of the big downers right now on things like Apple Watches and the like. Regardless, the side button is now going to be used to access a dock. So you can actually scroll through your apps. And there's going to be a control center. Swipe up from the bottom, and you can bring up a control center just like on the iPhone. You can go to airplane mode, do not disturb, etc. Now you can scribble instead of trying to type on a keyboard. So, welcome to Palm OS. So instead of typing or dictating a response, you can draw out each individual letter. Yeah, that sounds exciting. That'll work with either English or, okay, people need to stop saying or writing Chinese. Chinese is not a language.
Exactly.
They probably mean Mandarin. And I know for a fact that Mandarin and Cantonese use the same characters. However, those characters translate to are completely different.
Indeed.
So regardless, Mandarin is the majority language spoken in China. So this probably means Mandarin. Now, this is actually really cool. WatchOS 3 will have a new SOS feature. So if you... when you hold the side button down, your watch and therefore your phone will call 911, will send location information to the 911 operator and all your emergency contacts. It will also share your medical ID if you have one for your allergies, your age, existing medical conditions, etc. on your watch. This will work internationally. It'll call country-specific emergency numbers. So if you're here, 911. If you're in Sweden, 112, etc. And as long as the watch is tethered to a phone or connected to Wi-Fi. This is actually really cool.
It's cool, but again, I just wonder how many phantom dialings we're going to get, depending on how long you have to hold it.
I think you need to hold it for like 10 or 11 seconds. It's a long time. So
yeah, but all it takes is some kid getting a hold of it.
Well, yeah, you know, but
you'd almost want to see, like, you count to 5, you hold it, let go for 2 seconds, you know.
If you're in a dire situation, you're not going to remember any sort of pattern. All you're going to remember is, I need to hold this thing as long as I possibly can because it's going to call 911 and tell them where I am. So, I mean, if they need to make some tweaks, they can make tweaks. But the fact that this feature exists is really, really cool. And if I had like severe allergies where I needed an EpiPen or something like that, I would consider getting the Apple Watch just for something like that.
There you go. Exactly. So, okay. iOS, they got a slew of updates. Most important one, Apple Music gets a complete redesign. Thank goodness, because this is my grumpy old man part here. The latest version of it sucks.
I'm going to have to take your word for it because I touched it like day one and I haven't touched it since.
Yeah, no, it's just fine. You know, you can get to things like when I look for music, I tend to look by genre, and it's a absolute pain in the butt compared to what it used to be. So, you know, looks like they're going to be, making some changes there. They're going to be taking a thing directly from Spotify with a new discovery mix.
Oh, good. You caught on that too.
Yeah. That tailors a playlist to listeners' taste.
Daily. Whereas Spotify's, I think, is weekly.
Yeah. So, there'll be a little things like that. You can also read song lyrics, stuff like that. Again, really, I know they're really focusing on the whole streaming experience sort of thing. So, Maps, well, okay.
Maps got made to look a lot more like Google Maps, basically.
Yeah, but unless the data is updated correctly, I hate the fact that London, when Maps was first released, the data they were using had clouds. So you couldn't see half the city.
Oh, the pictures. Yeah. No. I don't think that's changed. And honestly, that is so annoying. That is the most annoying thing about Apple Maps is the fact that they don't have, they didn't bother to get photos of Earth on non-cloudy days.
Exactly.
It's not that hard. Just, wait a day, take another picture.
That's why Map is in that little folder of apps I never use, but I can't delete. And Google Maps is installed on the homepage. Exactly.
Yeah.
What else? iMessage. Bigger emojis. Oh. Hey, I knew you were waiting for that.
Honestly, bigger emojis, that's fine because they are puny right now. They're almost not even worth using because they are so tiny on the screen. So that's fine.
My wife uses emojis all the time, and quite often I have to take my glasses off and look like, what the hell is this?
Yeah,
exactly. So
the animated effects, what?
Meh.
What? Like, what? Honestly, I saw that and I went, oh, I had that in MSN Messenger in 2002.
Or ICQ even.
No, I wasn't using ICQ in 2002. No, seriously, in 2002, I was going to Fanshawe College. I had a girlfriend who was living in Hamilton attending McMaster University. We used to video chat. We had obnoxious full screen animated things that popped up in Windows.
It's a family show. I don't want to hear the details.
No. No, it's like these animation type things that they're showing off in iMessages and iMessage for iOS 10. Like all of these super obnoxious, you got to interact with it in a stupid way, special way things. I had these 14 years ago. I don't want them now. I hated them back then. Like, I just stop. Yeah, the worst part, is typing, right? Your message out. And iMessage will now highlight words that can be turned into emoji.
Yep.
Man, if I've already written the word out, I'm not going to turn it into an emoji. Like, exactly. Why would I bother writing out pizza just so iMessage can highlight pizza and remind me that there's a pizza emoji? I don't care.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of just like Clippy from Office. Hey, it looks like you're writing an email.
Looks like you're writing a suicide note. Seriously. It's like, who on your software development team thought that was a good idea?
Who knows, but they should be shot. But anyway, I like what The Verge says. iMessage is turning into some kind of Snapchat, WhatsApp, Facebook, Messenger conglomerate.
There's going to be an app store.
I got a perfect app for Olio to develop. A plain text message thing. No fuss, no muss. And you can even set it so it looks like it's coming from a 1200 baud modem.
That's called SMS. Pure text messaging with your font sent to Courier New. Done.
That's right. I don't want fancy fonts. I want I want like the sound of a modem every time it connects.
should it go? Yep,
exactly.
Every time.
Exactly. There you go. We can always use Morse code. Stuff like that, you know.
No, seriously, exactly. Though, it's just iMessage looks so annoying. I don't want to touch it anymore, but I have an iPad, and it's like, oh, the emoji I'm going to get from my mom is going to get ridiculous.
Oh, dear. As I said,
yeah.
See, welcome to being an old fart, a curmudgeon.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm so there. Okay, if anybody was following the Canadian Tech Podcast Twitter account that day, that was all me. All the snark.
Oh, I know.
Yep, that was all me. Yep. So if you really want to know how I felt beyond this, and maybe you skipped a few times already, just go back and read the tweets, and you will see just how snarky I was at the time. And
it was you, because I didn't get a single message saying, is that you being snarky? So people obviously assumed.
Well, and then I sent out a tweet from my personal account saying, if something along the lines of, you know, if people start getting, or if Emojify becomes, you know, really popular, I'm going to have to start taking a happy face and then a pill. Happy pills. So, anyway.
All right, let's move on from
that.
We
need to move on. Photos is getting updated. It will now collect and collate photos into locations and events and dates and that sort of thing to create memories. Again, Google Photos does something very, very similar. Yeah, I will get a Google story about today, I'm sure, because of all the pictures I took at the Great Lakes International Auto Show.
Air show.
Sorry. Auto show. That's NAIAS.
Wings, not wheels.
Not Glias.
You were in a plane, not a car.
I was in a plane. It was a beautiful plane. Voicemail transcription is coming to iOS 10. I don't know what to say about this one, because I can only imagine. I mean, voicemail transcriptions always suck. It doesn't matter which speech-to-text engine is running it. So
sometimes amusing, but yeah, usually sucks.
I have low hopes.
TVOS
now has 1,300 video channels. Well done. 6,000 apps. Also well done. Here in Canada, CBC recently launched a TVOS app. I will say that. Yes. All of the other ones here are all American or French, so I'll skip over those.
Molotov, a French TV service. You know, who the heck names it something after a device you throw that breaks and burns
the
up?
The French do, because they don't care. I'm going to smoke my cigarette while I throw this Molotov cocktail at your stupid Uber cab. Huh?
What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
Dear. Yeah. No, you know what? You know, there's some pretty cool things. At some point, I'm probably going to upgrade my Apple TV.
Well, so why don't you talk about what's cool here? I have two Apple TVs at work.
The main thing for me, and again, I don't use a lot of the different channels, but the main thing for me is one of the reasons I got the Apple. Well, one of the bonuses when I got an Apple TV is we use a service called Plex.
Yes.
It's a little server, lets us, watch stuff on our iPhones and iPads or on our computers. But then some open source guys, they made an app called Plex Connect, which allows you to take over the movie trailer section of your Apple TV. To allow you to then have Plex content coming through your big screen TV. So that's something my wife likes. It's very easy. It's spouse friendly, and I love it. Now, the only thing is it's fairly straightforward to do it, but you do have to do a little bit of geeky stuff. Like you have to – you don't have to jailbreak the Apple TV, but you have to like overwrite a registry file and you know certificates and stuff like that. It's nothing complicated, but it's definitely challenging if you're not a techie. Well,
sure.
Plex now has an app. So if you have a new Apple TV, you basically just install this app. You say, this is where my Plex server is on my network, and it takes care of the rest.
Yeah.
You know, that idea, like, I also like the idea of, you know, the single sign-on system is nice. And, of course, they're rolling out a new Apple TV remote app, which is going to have the functionality of the newer Apple TV remote. So that'll be kind of cool, I think, as well. So we'll see what happens there. So, yeah, I think it's good. Like I said, we love our Apple TV. You know, it's replaced cable for us for stuff like that. There's also some excellent channels you can get with it. And again, all these other ones. There's no shortage of free content you can get. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see some of these other 1,300 apps at some point. So, yeah, maybe at some point I'll look at that. So,
Fair enough.
What else? Siri's opening up for app developers.
Finally. Yeah, so you'll actually be able to send requests through Siri for your phone. So, example, you can use Siri to send a message through WeChat if you happen to be Chinese for the most part. You can use it to call an Uber if you live in an area where that's allowed. You can use it to search for photos on Pinterest, start and stop your workout apps, that sort of thing. Obviously, app developers will have to actually bake this in so that you know, Siri will actually know what phrase to look for and that sort of thing. But that's really cool. And we'll, and again, welcome to Android. And QuickType will bring Siri intelligence to the keyboard using deep learning to enable more intelligent predictive typing using expanded context. So,
you know something? I'm turning that off as soon as I get it.
Well, okay. So I think my last beef, unless we have another, no, we don't have another Apple thing after this. So my big beef is with this whole differential privacy thing. So Apple's made a really, really big deal over the past 2 or 3 years about the fact that they don't harvest your data. We don't look at your data. All the cool things we do for you are all done on device. That's not true anymore in iOS 10. They are absolutely now harvesting a lot of your data, or not a lot, some of your data, in order to crowdsource it, glean info from it, and try to figure out what predictive text to give you, what you might want to use Siri for.
It's the only way it can be done.
Et cetera. Yeah. Exactly. It is absolutely the only way they could, it could be done. And I knew they were going to have to hit this point at some point. However, what they're saying is that it's all completely anonymized. It's crowdsourced. They're adding fake data into it to help obscure individual people. So like they're going to add BS to your data. They're going to add BS to my data, et cetera. And you know, basically they're completely scrubbing it of any personally identifiable information, which is good. However, they are no longer the "we don't do anything in the cloud" company.
That's right.
So they're going to have to stop talking about that. Differential privacy is apparently a very how do I say it? It's a fully baked concept amongst academics. And apparently they've had some people in to look at what they're doing, and they're like, yep, this is the way to do it. So that's great. But they're no longer the "we do everything on your phone" people anymore. And they need to stop saying that, because data is actually going back to Apple servers. It might be anonymized. It might be obscured. And they've added, like I said, BS data to it to help obfuscate any potential issues. But they are still harvesting information now. And like you said, they had to at some point. If they really wanted to keep up on the AI deep learning side of things, they were going to have to at some point. And with iOS 10 and macOS Sierra, they will. So welcome to the dark side.
There you go. So, and you know, Apple doesn't have to add a lot of BS. I can do my own BS. I don't know about you, but you know, I know
lots of people who think I'm full of hot air. So yeah, that's okay.
There we go. So exactly. Okay, let's move on away from Apple. Let's move over to our good friends from Germany, Volkswagen.
Friends,
who also we should say is also Audi and Porsche.
Yeah, Volkswagen Group is actually a very, very big company. They do own Audi. They do own Porsche. I think they also own Opel and Seat over in Europe. Seat is a Spanish brand. Opel, I don't know where they're from. Regardless, they are not just Volkswagen and Audi. So they have said that they are going to unveil, or deliver, rather, 30 new electric vehicles across all of their brands by 2025. So considering that's only 9 years from now, that's like 3 or 4 per year. So that's cool. And they are actually
a very aggressive cycle.
It is, and good for them. So they are actually forecasting that their own battery-powered electric vehicle sales will be between 2 and 3 million units that year in 2025, and that is actually equivalent to almost between 20% and 25%. So up to a quarter of their total sales expected at that time. So that's actually.
This wouldn't have anything to do, because I didn't see they mentioned diesel there. That wouldn't have to do with a certain scandal, would it?
No, not at all. I'm certain it is. And you know what? This is a heck of a way to rehabilitate your image, to say, yep, well, you can't fake emissions data on an electric vehicle. So certainly this is one way to move forward. They do have this buddy concept that you'll see here on the Ars Technica article. I don't want that, but I mean, it's kind of a cool looking vehicle. Regardless, they obviously have a bunch of ideas. I would imagine we'd see an Audi R8 looking vehicle in electric, maybe a Porsche Panamera looking vehicle in electric model. Those sorts of things, which will help push forward the luxury side of things. And of course, mm-hmm, if you could get an electric VW Beetle or an Audi A4 or a Passat or a Jetta, you know, closer, yep, to the lower end, that's awesome. And it'll really help legitimize this market that Tesla
definitely
completely dominates. And yep, I mentioned earlier this week on Twitter, I am seeing a lot of Tesla Model S's in London recently.
I have to admit, given a choice of their various brands, I tend to gravitate towards the Porsche side of the brand catalog.
I actually tend towards the Audis.
Yeah, some of the Audis are nice too, but I have to admit there's some very nice, very nice Porsches, usually beginning with 9-something and, you know, 0 to stupid and no time at all. But anyway, a guy can dream.
Yeah, you can keep dreaming. The Porsche Panamera is a lot more reasonable, and it actually has 2 seats in the back. You can fit 4 or 5 people in there.
Exactly. You can fit the family, a potted plant, and outdrag most of the U.S. Muscle cars.
Yeah, so good luck to Volkswagen bringing out 3 or 4 new electric vehicles over the next 9 years. Looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah, great. Okay, one more Google story.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know how we got this Google.
Out of sequence. That's all right. You go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. Google has unveiled Springboard, which is really Google Now for Google Apps for Work. Or Google for Work, whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
Google Apps
for Business, actually.
Yeah, sure. So you'll be able to use Google Springboard now to search all across your Gmail, Calendar, Docs, Drive, Contacts, Sheets, you know, Slides, whatever else.
Slides, parchments, whatever.
Yes. Scrolls. It will also assist you throughout your day by proactively providing useful and actionable information and recommendations. So really, it's Google Now for Work, which is actually really, really cool. And on a side note, they completely redid Google Sites. Not that I'm going to promote it because clever host. But anyway, it looks much, much better. The examples here of what you can build now with Google Sites look far and above, way, way, way better than what you could do 2 months ago. So and they have really taken my advice to heart, which is made the new Google Sites look great on big screens.
It's about time they finally listen to you, right?
Yes. Please, more people start listening to me, especially web development firms. Can you make sure that your responsive websites and web apps actually look good on super high res, really big screens too? That'd be great.
Exactly.
Thanks
exactly.
In advance.
So there we go. Hopefully Google will send you their check very soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Exactly. Just keep waiting for that, eh? Exactly. Okay. Yeah. We're getting through there, actually, aren't we? Okay,
yeah,
Rhapsody. This is one of yours. Rhapsody globally rebrands music server as Napster after doing so in Canada last November, and because reasons.
Napster. Because
I've
why
heard
not?
That name before.
Yeah, I remember Napster. I was like, this is 1999, and I remember downloading a ton of music through my 56K dial-up connection with either Get the Net or Golden Triangle. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I was too. Or both, you know, at some point. So Rhapsody, who some of the old timers might know better as the being owned by Real Networks, aka the badass guys who made Real Player back
there
in the
go.
Day. Oh yeah, we're going way back. Real Networks bought the remnants of Napster 5 years ago, and they actually rebranded Rhapsody as Napster last November here in Canada. So I have to imagine this was actually like a successful test of some kind, because they're doing it everywhere now. Rhapsody actually has 3.5 million customers as of the end of last year. So certainly they're making money. And that was actually 35% growth in paid subscribers. So
there you go.
That's congrats to Rhapsody and now Napster for making money and bringing back my dearest cat with headphones on.
Exactly.
Logo,
or as they say in the linked article, sounds of the undead. Yeah, the logo is one of the best things about it.
Of course.
I also remember seeing web cartoons when Napster announced it was going to have to shut down. I think we had more bandwidth going through the internet in that month as people panicked to grab albums and whatnot.
Yeah.
Before the service, you know, it's like, get me out of the drive.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. Well, again, we'll see.
I made so many
there.
Pirated CDs in 1999 and 2000, and then Kazaa or whatever came along,
Bearshare,
and yeah.
Well, with me moving house, I've come across some of those old collections on my old Amiga, drawers upon drawers of floppy disks of acquired software, shall we say. So one of these times I'm going to see if I can fire up the old girl and see if she still works.
Attaboy.
Okay, so you have kids, and I know kids seem to like Pokemon.
No, I want this for me.
Oh, okay. See, I missed this whole generation, so I never really, you know, forgive me, my friend, I never really got into Pokemon. So
okay, well,
this is all yours.
In 1996, 1997, when I was still 12 or 13 years old, Pokemon got huge. And then for one season of the cartoon and nothing else, I was really into Pokemon. Not afraid to admit it. Now, I did not get into the card capturing game. I've never bought any of the video. I've never played any of the video games. So it was a completely passive interest. However, I now found a reason to play Pokemon. Pokemon Go, an augmented reality free-to-play mobile game from Niantic. You might also know Niantic as the makers of, what was that augmented reality game that Google started a few years ago? I don't remember. There was two sides. One's trying to defend the world and like take over portals and stuff. Anyway, you probably remember it. Google spun off Niantic as another bet in the Alphabet team, in the Alphabet group. And we knew this was coming, but this game, Pokemon Go, will be available this July. Nintendo announced this during the second day of E3, their live stream. They didn't give a specific day in July, sometime in July.
Okay, so you'll be waiting every day, and again, when we hear this,
I'm going to be refreshing the Google Play Store July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, until this thing comes out.
And so when Derek's Twitter stream goes silent, kids, you know the game's been released.
Yes. What I probably won't get is the Pokemon Go Plus wrist-worn wearable that will actually let you play the game without using your smartphone. That'll be $35 US. You're probably looking around 44 or 45 Canadian. Not going to be ready quite at launch, probably another month or two. But Ingress. There we go. Niantic made Ingress a few years ago,
yes,
which is still
yes.
running. But now they've got Pokemon Go under their belt. And the Verge here has a hands-on look at the game. Feel free to take a look at it. But basically, let's use a local example. You could literally be down at the Forks of the Thames by that big Swiss fountain. And if everybody had phones, in like a year or two, we could all be watching two players duke it out with their pretend Pokemon in augmented reality. Everybody needs a VR headset or an AR headset right now, because this, no, I'm not kidding you. This is going to happen. If esports can become a huge thing that people, it's on cable now. Your people are watching other people watch or play League of Legends on TBS down in the States.
I know. It's crazy.
So I'm not kidding you. Give it 5 years and people are going to be getting together in big public spaces, Victoria Park, Nathan Phillips Square in Toronto, the big famous fountain in Rome, the base of the Eiffel Tower.
And you're sure they're not going to get beaten up?
I'm certain they're not going to get beaten up.
Okay.
And
all right.
This is what's going to happen. Player A will have the Pokemon Go Plus or phone. Player B will have the same. They're going to pick their Pokemon, a Pikachu and whatever. And, Turtle Bub or whatever it's called. Bulbasaur. There's one. Bulbasaur. I'm trying to dig into my memories here. my 20-year-old memories. Pikachu and Bulbasaur. And you'll be able to watch in your glasses, in your AR headset, watch these two Pokemon duke it out as their trainers are controlling them from their phones or from their wrist-worn thing. And you know what? It's actually going to be really exciting. And I'm actually really looking forward to it because I think this will be really cool.
So we can definitely say, mark this date down. You heard it here first. Episode 75, Derek predicted it.
So in 5 years, on June 19th,
we're going to be down at the Forks of the Thames.
2021, people will be down at the Forks of the Thames and Nathan Phillips Square and the base of the Eiffel Tower, places like that, watching other people battle virtual Pokemon. Yep.
Oh, dear.
I said it now. You wait. And you know what? It's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll
You know what? Hey, anything's possible. So why the hell not? Okay, we're almost done. Really.
Local story. It's all yours.
Local story. Yeah, this is one I just saw in the Free Press the other day.
This is cool.
A couple of local young lads who, again, in my eyes, are still babies, 19 and 23. Well, you said what, you were in high school in like 93, 94. I was working, so.
97. Anyway,
whatever. I was still working, damn it. Damn young punks. Yeah, so this is, he started up a little startup. He came over from Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. He went to Western and that. And this is a kind of a neat little thing. Club Evoke, I'm going to assume it sounds like.
Evoke,
Basically, he's taking the same model as like Harry's and some of those things where... that sort of thing. Every month you get a subscription-based, you pay 50 or 60 bucks, you get a little box. But in this case, his parents were into a whole textile business, stuff like that, and ties and things like that. So you're basically going to be getting this little box, and it may come with a bow tie. It'll come with cufflinks, pocket squares, and other men's accessories. So right now he's got 60 monthly subscribers, but he's hoping to grow it some more. It's kind of a cool idea. I just thought the story was neat. He's partnering up with another young guy who's helping him on the business side of things. So, you know, I always like to promote young startups and stuff like that. So good for them.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, 50 bucks a month is, you know, not necessarily super affordable. But when you consider that you're actually going to get multiple pieces of clothing, you know, a nice handkerchief, a bow tie, maybe a necktie,
and if you're in that
tie bar, that sort of thing.
And usually you're in that demographic where they don't have a lot of extra expenses right now. Honestly,
you can go to like Burberry, for instance, and the handkerchief alone will cost you $50.
Yep, exactly.
So, and it's all coming from the same factories for the most part. Yep. So realistically, 50 bucks a month, that's a lot of people, that's less than half a lot of people's clothing budgets, right?
Yeah.
So 50 bucks a month, you're going to get a bunch of men's fashion accessories. You can also buy individual boxes for 60 bucks a month. So I think that's actually really cool.
Groomsmen's gift, stuff like that. I think it's an awesome idea. So yeah, good for them. It's an interesting little story I noticed. So yeah, so that's our local story. Okay, stuff we like. I'm going on a library theme again. Fair disclosure, I'm vice chair of the board of the London Public Library, but this is one we actually, the library's actually done for a little while, but it was mentioned in the Free Press the other day. And this is, you know, everyone says with libraries, oh, why do we need libraries? We don't need librarians, books, we have Google, we have stuff like that. But, you know, librarians do more than, you know, tell you to go shh and, you know, so and put the books away. You know, in fact, these days, they don't even tell you to go shh, they encourage talking and information exchange and that. So this is kind of the same idea. The idea is, you know, let's say you're doing some deep research on something and you're really having trouble finding the appropriate thing. Well, the library actually has access to a lot of catalogs, including Ancestry.com and a lot of other things where it might help your search in it. So you can actually book a librarian and, you know, they will help you with your search or whatever. So, yeah, it's definitely part of, you know, how libraries have evolved. It's a good use. So there's some good examples here in the Free Press story. So some similar things people have been looking for. Someone wanted to find the grave of a specific Canadian war veteran, finding information on summer jobs for a university age child, documenting the history of a house who lived in it when it was built, or a list of all the countries colonized by Italy. So, again, probably for a book report or something. There's all sorts of interesting things that you can do. And as I said, the library has a lot of access, and the librarians, they're very smart people. So definitely check it out. Again, links are in the show notes. And that's my pick of the week. What's cool. yours?
Mine is Google Fit. This is Android Fit. Only, but Google Fit is actually a really good, it's like Apple Health. So it's an aggregator of all of your health data from MyFitnessPal, MyRun, and it also uses your accelerometer and your gyroscope inside your phone to actually automatically track whether you've been walking, running, cycling, that sort of thing. And then, so it acts as a pedometer. It tells me how many calories I've burned automatically, cool. even tells me my inactive calories. So, you know, just being alive burns calories.
That's almost good.
Yeah. Just being like, alive. I mean, being you alive. Could, yeah, you could lie in bed all day and you'd still burn, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 calories, just, you know, churning food, breathing, thinking burns mm-hmm. calories. So thinking not does. A lot, but, you know, certainly not as much as running or walking or cycling, but regardless, it does. So, so you actually get a really, really good view of how many calories you've burned and how many steps you've taken and how far those steps took you and that sort of thing. And the nice thing is that the GPS only kicks in when Google Fit automatically figures out that you are running or cycling. So that's really cool. And helps with battery life, obviously, if it's not constantly checking the GPS. And and I'm really, really enjoying it so far. I still need to get it connected to my Fitness Pal and Runkeeper, I think I was using last for running.
Yes.
But I'm really, really enjoying it right now. And the design is great. Animations are really, really cool. Make it a lot of fun to use. And I'm just looking at the web version right now. And I can actually log my weight. I can add an activity if something I did outside the app or did manually. So, you know, gardening or what have you. And and it'll sync up all my stuff. So I'm really enjoying it so far. Check it out. You can view all the information you could want at google.com/fit, and you can get links to the app or to the web version from here. Oh, and it also works on Android Wear Watch.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. So, yeah, nope. Good health is always good. Well, again, you're a father, so we should also say Happy Father's Day to you and all
Thank
the
you
all
very
dads.
Much.
And you guys, you know, you guys wear up enough calories chasing the children around.
Dude. I flew a plane today.
You flew a plane. Okay. Yes, we should also point out he flew a plane today.
I can die.
Yes, he did have supervision.
I can die a happy man. No, I did have supervision. I only had my hands on the controls by myself, though, for about 3 minutes or so. I went
and
to
you
the...
you had your father and your son.
And I had my dad and my kid.
And turning 9 shades of white.
Yeah, it took about an hour for my dad to convince himself that he should come with my oldest son and I. And... yeah, he was still very reluctant. And even my oldest son, who's never been on a plane until today, he said he was a little nervous. And I said, you know what, that's okay, but it's going to be fine. And once he was in the air, he didn't care. He thought it was the best thing ever. Walking around afterwards like, oh, this was the most awesome day ever.
Excellent.
And you got to fly the plane, Dad. Like, yeah, I did. That was great. So,
good for you, mate.
Yeah,
good
I wanted to you. Get my pilot's license for a really, really long time. And so the fact that the pilot was like, hey, do you want to take the controls? It's like, are you serious? Yes, of course I want to take the controls. And, you know, and he just let me fly over Sparta and Port Stanley a little bit.
Good. I should say from my days of flying gliders, a couple of important things. As long as takeoffs and landings equal the same, you're fine. any landing that you come out alive is a good one.
Yes. Oh, there was actually an incredible glider at the event. The
Great Lakes International Air Show was today.
At the Great, yes. This pilot is incredible, did very, very acrobatic maneuvers. And it was just... But at the same time, because there was no engine or
anything, it's just very quiet. Yeah, that's what I used to do when I used to fly gliders and cadets. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's something about it.
Now
remember, and the other thing is the next time you go up, especially if it's an old Cessna, a Cessna will barrel roll if you have enough altitude. Just saying. Not that I'm trying to start anything, but you know, it will
starting anything at all.
No, I
have every ambition to get my private pilot's license, and I actually got like a full cost sheet today, and as long as I don't need to do everything within like a year or two, I think I might actually start ground school like this fall or maybe early next winter.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, how much is it these days for the whole thing?
For the whole shebang, 10,225 plus HST.
I looked at it 20 years ago, it was about five.
Yeah, the vast majority of that is your in-flight time, right? Like your in-plane time with an instructor.
Gas is expensive, kids.
Of course, yeah. The instructor is like $65 an hour. That's actually really reasonable. And the plane itself, the operating is, I think it was $128 an hour.
That's
and once
not
you
bad figure,
once you calculating nav gas and insurance and stuff like that, you really can't complain. So
that's not bad at all. And best of all, now if you look, most of the commercial pilots and crews and that, they all use iPads now instead of aircraft.
My dream plane right now is a fairly recent Beechcraft G58 Baron. The two big reasons are: A, the newer ones are super comfy. B, it has great range, and C, it has two engines. So if one fails, I'm still in the air.
It's always good.
Yeah.
My dream plane is still a Supermarine Spitfire Mark V, but many of those
Supermarine
left. Yeah. Or if you want twin engine, a de Havilland Mosquito. They were built actually here in London. The Wooden Wonder set several world speed records.
I know a lot of de Havillands. I do not know the Mosquito.
Was it's a fighter bomber. Just have a Google search. It was involved in a lot of different raids. Used the same engine as the Spitfire, the Rolls-Royce Merlin.
Yeah.
And it was made out of literally almost balsa wood, and it could go like stink. So they used it for aerial reconnaissance balsa and wood. Stuff like that.
The Spitfire, of course. Oh, this is a beautiful plane.
Spitfire, very nice. Second World War fighter.
I was going to say, that's obviously a World War II era fighter.
Basically, pilots would describe it as you didn't step into the plane, you strapped the plane on. but on my bucket list, because they do have, people have modified a few to make two-seater models.
Oh, yeah.
On my bucket list, I want to get into that. And there is a couple of flying Mosquitoes left. Actually, one came to Hamilton a couple of years ago. They had one out of New Zealand. There's only a couple. And they actually had a thing where they called it the Merlin Dozen. So they had the Lancaster there, which has four Merlin engines.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Mosquito, which has two. Mm-hmm. And then they had four Spitfires and two Hurricanes, which all had, you know, and again, beautiful sound. There's nothing like a Merlin. So anyway, before we should wrap this up before this becomes the air show.
I was going to say, should we start an aircraft podcast?
God, we could. We could completely geek out. I'm slowly getting my modeling room unpacked so I can start building kits again.
Nice.
So exactly.
Once I start ground school, we'll have to consider that. But anyway, we should end for today.
I used a textbook called From the Ground Up, and it's probably still published.
Probably.
Just to see. I'll have to find it, and I'll have to lend it to you just relax.
Ground school textbooks, etc., pre-flight, your pre-flight time, that's actually all really, really cheap. That's like $1,000.
Yeah.
So
it's the actual flight. How many hours before you certify?
Transport Canada minimum is 40.
40.
And yeah, they recommend, and St. Thomas Flight Center recommends 45, and I'd prefer to have a little extra rather than just doing the bare minimum.
A little bit of extra is good, and then you have your solo. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's 40. Transport Canada minimum is 40 flight, 10 pre-flight hours.
Right.
So
when you solo, you have to have your wife and family there and a bottle of champagne.
Oh, yes.
Because what happens is when you come out of the plane, your family and friends get to shower you with the champagne.
Absolutely. Like, it's I just tradition. Won a race.
Exactly. Exactly. You survived. Landing at equal takeoff.
Yes. I took off. I landed. 1-1. Things are good.
Things are good. That's, hey, if you keep that rule, that's the most important rule.
Yep.
So, yeah, needless to say, there's a lot of dark humor in aviation. So,
of course.
Anyway,
okay, this is going to be a 2-hour podcast if we keep going. So let's
end it now. It already is, so we figured, what the heck, a few extra minutes. All right. So thank you again for the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 75 for Sunday, June 19th, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Flyman Silva.
Thank you and be well.